jobs are gone, I ain't coming back overseas. Might as well close the store.
Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of the World Labor Hour, brought to you by listener-supported community radio station WFT, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and at www.wft.org, live worldwide. And the views and opinions expressed here, those of speakers, do not necessarily represent those of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, here's Gus with some underwriting announcements.
The Campus Faculty Association at the University of Illinois advocates for academic freedom, shared governance, and the strong faculty voice on campus. CFA is proud to support Community Radio and the Labor Hour in support of strong unions. You can learn more about the CFA by visiting cfaillinois.org. This hour of programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice hosts regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month at 9:30 a.m. at Channing Murray Foundation, 1209 West Oregon, Urbana. For more information, visit www.centralillinoisjobswithjustice.org. Programming on the World Labor Hour is important in part by listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. The World Labor Hour is supported in part by listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. The Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice, both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio.
Okay, thank you, Gus. We're going to have two live guests here in the studio today. And the first one is right here. We're going to go right to, could you introduce yourself to the listeners, please?
I'm Nancy Dietrich, and I live in Urbana, community member for almost 20 years.
Okay. And so you recently attended the People Summit in Chicago?
That's right. People Summit was June 17th through 19th in Chicago at McCormick Place. And, yeah, went there, attended a few sessions. My husband had a booth there, too, which is part of the reason why we met.
Okay.
Just a general synopsis, I guess. One thing that was very encouraging, I thought, was the attendance. There was over 3,000 people there, which was very good.
And that was at McCormick Place?
That is correct.
Okay.
And it was the main sponsor of it was National Nurses United, which I thought was very encouraging. A lot of nurses there, so I thought that was great. But yeah, it was an encouraging time to know that the progressive cause has really become popular, especially with the Bernie Sanders campaign.
Okay. And so I've been to these conferences. In fact, you and I attended the Labor Campaign for Single Payer conference in Chicago in October. And so as usual at these places, you know, they got kind of usually a couple of general, you know, all attended meetings, but they have a lot of workshops and breakout sessions and stuff. And so it's hard to, you know, talk about everything that happened there. But just from what you experienced, what was the theme and sort of maybe some consensus, you know?
Well, I think the theme of the whole weekend was where do we go from here?
Mm-hmm.
After the Bernie Sanders campaign is over, what do we do?
Okay.
I don't know if there was a consensus on what we're going to do, yeah. but I think there's a consensus that something needs to happen beyond the Bernie campaign.
Okay.
And I know not everybody is, you know, in, you know, was supportive necessarily, but, it was a, it, so the main theme was how do we keep this momentum going? And, one panel discussion that I went to was called Understanding Our Movement Moment. So they had kind of this theme of this is a moment in history that we really need to take advantage of. And one of the points the Sanders, I think she was the main Sanders campaign advisor, one point that she made was that one positive thing from the Sanders campaign is they use technology to build volunteer teams in throughout the United States to run the campaign because they knew it was more about the campaign. So they do have a sort of infrastructure, I guess, of email lists and these volunteer campaigns throughout the United States that they can tap into to try to keep the momentum going. So I thought that was kind of an interesting point.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's really just very fascinating and wonderful what you all are doing. You know, especially the fact that you're emphasizing that this is a moment, something that can be built into a movement, whereas in there's way too many people thinking that movements are just happening without having any type of base or any type of objective. And I think that's really awesome that you all are setting that stage, because one of the things that we haven't really talked a lot about is what Sanders real, what is proven is that we have a country steeped in anti-communism or pro-capitalism. But what the Bernie Sanders campaign shows is that people, millions of people, have a very large critique of capital. And this is something that that not only we were expecting, but also the ruling class wasn't expecting as well.
Yes.
Because the Cold War is not that old.
Mm-hmm.
So you have people coming out saying, no, wait a minute, this thing that we've been promised for all these decades, there's a lot of cracks in this system. And so, like I said, you have to experience that. And now that they're at this next stage where Sanders has opened up this dialogue and made into a mass moment, then the next stage would be that movement moment where people say, not only are there cracks in this system, but we need to actually rehaul it and yeah. change it.
And so, yeah. I think one thing that Sanders campaign did too is made a lot of people out there realize, gee, I'm not the only one that thinks this way.
Exactly.
You know?
Right.
Yes.
And they did make that point, a couple of points that you mentioned, about Bernie made the word socialism, you were able to say it without like everybody thinking you were crazy. And
yes.
So that really helped. And the Sanders campaign advisor in this panel also made the point of, we understand that it's not just Bernie. Like you were saying, it's a movement. It's a, you know, the people built, made it possible for Bernie to run. And mm-hmm. I think that was a really good point. Although I will say too, on a different panel, it was called The People's Agenda. If there is a person that the leader that could be a real leader, are you guys familiar with Nina Turner? She's a
I've heard of her.
Yeah, I've heard of her.
Former mm-hmm. Ohio State Senator.
Okay.
She was fabulous. If you go on to there's a place that you can go on and watch videos of a lot of the sessions that happen, and it's on Vimeo.com, and it's /National Nurses United/videos. Watch the one with Nina Turner. She is fabulous. She's an African-American former Ohio State Senator. She's a wonderful speaker. So I nominate her as a new leader.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, so there was, you know, that focus on this is a movement, not just about one person. Other breakout sessions I went to was one called Taking on Krugman, the Economics of the Political Revolution.
Uh-huh.
And I know, David, you have a background in economics. Mm-hmm. Maybe you have some things to add to this. But I think their main theme of that, which I think it's kind of common knowledge, but their main thing was that countries like the United States that have their own sovereign currency can run deficits without it being a problem.
Right.
And so they talked a lot about that in mm-hmm. that particular panel discussion.
And how did Krugman fit into this?
I think they were just using that as kind of a catchy title to say, you know, that, you know, he's not right about everything. You know,
I never particularly liked Krugman. I know a lot of people, you know, that were progressives thought he was something, you know, special for a while. He kind
they
of
were pretty critical.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And one thing that was interesting, I'd be interested in hearing your guys' points on, was they were really against an income guarantee.
Really?
And their point was that they feel like it would just increase inequality because poor people will spend the money, but rich people will invest the money, and it will just increase inequality. So I was curious as to what you guys thought about that.
That's petty bourgeoisie ideology, because the fact of the matter is if there is a guaranteed income for people, it's been proven through studies that the more wealth that a particular family has, the better their socioeconomic conditions will be, neighborhoods, communities, healthcare, etc. So if you have a guaranteed income like that, you have a very substantial living wage, then what happens is that all the different aspects of life improve in those areas. So this idea of different groups investing and other groups spending, I don't believe that. I really believe that if people had guaranteed incomes, that there would be, the masses would invest, because that's always what they've done before capital came in and made it to where, well before capital transformed into, profit sharing instead of community improvement and upkeep.
That's really odd. I never would expect that to come out of there. Bill, what's your thoughts?
Well, what I'm wondering about this is this, the thinking, with this, like with Social Security, that if you means test it and keep wealthier people out of it, then it won't be accepted.
Mm.
You see, it'll be considered a welfare program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you see, the thing is, I don't agree with that.
No, I don't either.
So I think we should have a carbon tax, a major carbon tax, and return to lower income people in proportionate to your lower income. Yeah.
I've always thought that you need both a guaranteed income and minimum wage, like a $15 an hour minimum wage. You know, I think you need both of them. Some people disagree with me on that, but I think that it'd be the perfect, that would really,
Here's another thing too. I'm sorry. I don't want to sound like too much workfare here, but I mean, there's things that need done that aren't getting done. But of course, what happens though is many things that are done by the government are done at prevailing wage rates.
Right.
Which this would tend to undermine in some ways, but I don't know. We let people publicize their stupid business or organization by picking up cans along the road. Couldn't we let individuals that are getting the minimum or the guaranteed income do such a thing?
That's another can of worms issue.
Well, I mean, there's places where the KKK sponsors those.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, you're talking about voluntarily, though.
Yeah,
oh, voluntarily.
Don't you see those signs along the road? And actually, the official position, or at least it used to be, of the state AFL-CIO, is they oppose that.
Mm.
You see? But that's what I'm saying. There's all kinds of little things going on that, for example, I wish they'd send somebody out with a weed eater out to the interchanges out at Monticello and whack down all the weeds that are growing up through the crappy old concrete that they refuse to, don't want to replace. They went out there, they patched things in. It's awful.
Yeah.
I mean, it just makes me embarrassed to live in this country that we can't keep things up better. And I'm a major slob.
Yeah, well, and we have the money, it's just what are our priorities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is interesting. But okay, what else do they talk about?
Well, let's see. I went to another one called Media and the Movement.
Okay.
And one of the things they talked about is that money not being just a problem as far as in terms of campaign finance reform, but also in financing the media.
Oh, yeah.
And so how do we create – the big question is, and, you know, not really sure we came up with an answer, is how do you create and keep – sustainable journalism? And, you know, that's something that being involved with the independent media center that I've given some thought to, too, because it's wonderful that you can have citizen journalism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what you guys are doing is wonderful. But for a sustainable, like, media, I mean, there needs to be a way to compensate people, like, for their efforts. And I don't know how you do that.
Yeah, man, we could do a whole program on that topic, actually. Yeah.
Actually, this is something that might be coming to WEFT. They've been working on, several people here, Sandra, probably, you know, the prime mover behind these things.
Mm-hmm.
And what's wanted is ultimately a daily news show. But I will tell you right now, you cannot do a daily news of any kind without a full-time person.
That's right.
Right.
You see? And I think there's thoughts of putting together like a coalition sort of, or I think it's actually happening, with the Independent Media Center and other organizations. And this brings something to mind. I remember about 20 years ago, I was on the board of directors of something called the Community Media Coalition, which had all the major big, like, Planned Parenthood organizations like that. And that's probably what we need to do again.
Okay.
Another thing like that.
Yeah, that's a great topic. These are some, I mean, that's a great topic because, boy, I'll tell you what, I mean, you know, a lot of, I think a lot of people in the progressive movement, really, underestimate, the power of the corporate media. I mean, it shapes people's reality other than their own personal experiences.
Right. Yeah, I think it's a great idea as well in that you have to, we have to start thinking of this in the sense of people have to get paid to do this type of work. It's very strenuous work. And because of the way the economic situation is, it's very difficult for people to have time to volunteer at the level we need them to build community organizations.
Now, you're a history major, Gus. During the New Deal, didn't they have, besides, you know, paying people to go out and, you know, repair and build infrastructure, and they also had a segment of that for various artists, right? I mean, performance artists, writers like James Baldwin. And
I was directed to a movie called The Cradle Will Rock.
I saw that. That's a good film.
I saw that at the theater, man. It's a good movie.
Yeah.
It is kind of sad that it was the unions that kind of bummed everybody out.
Well, there was, yeah, but you know, just like with, you know, Roosevelt's, you know, Public Works Administration and stuff, there was some, even though the building trades leadership at that time was not the most enlightened, they did have some issues.
Oh, by the way, folks,
about that.
This movie is about somebody who did, I can't remember who it was now, one of the great, songwriters, they did a musical based on a strike that was going on. It's actually a historical strike too. And what happened was they wanted to do a performance of it, but it was I can't even remember why now, but the actors unions and such didn't want it to happen. So what happened is that the guy that wrote it did a solo performance of it, and at the end of the movie all the actors are in the audience and they get up and start singing their part.
Okay.
So,
but that's interesting. You know, that would be,
I just want people to know
that would be one solution is basically to, you know, have, tax money pay for, students and even just regular people in the community that want to, you know, do things like this, you know,
you're talking about the guaranteed income. That guaranteed income could be a stipend for at least a part-time ability to do. See, Dave, one of the reasons that I can do this is that I have a laborer's card, and that means that I can work part-time. And quite often I do, and I don't want to.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have more spare time, and I don't have a family.
Right. Yeah. That's a really good point, because that's kind of the, you know, same way with me is I don't have children. I have a flexible job. I can go to the People Summit. I can come here and talk about this.
And see,
it's a place of privilege.
Yeah.
Right. And I argue with people here at WEFT about such things by the only way you can participate meaningfully is have to go to god-awful billions of meetings. You know, there's no other way for people to get involved. I mean, people I work with, you know, if they even had wanted to do this, they just really couldn't because it's soccer practice and, you know.
Well, and also, like you pointed out, Bill, blue collar jobs, you gotta be there at a certain time, you gotta take lunch at a certain time, and you gotta leave at a certain time. There's no flexibility. See, I mean, you could take a day off once in a while, but you do that too often, and,
well,
you know.
There's two basic differences between blue collar workers and others. We take our showers in the evening, and we do not have discretion over our time.
Yeah.
See, Peter Miller, when we started this show, he didn't understand that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was really interesting how I explained that to him one day.
Yeah.
No, I think that's a really good point. And, but I think it also isn't just about media in that way.
Yeah.
Like you guys are alluding to, really. That it affect, you know, it really needs to focus on the whole movement and being able to compensate people for being involved in a movement. Because, like you said, there's only so many volunteer hours that people are going to do before they just burn out. Or, you know, they aren't going to have that time. So.
Yeah, we reached the moment in late Capitol where there is no availability of time. Even when Capitol first started, it was always emphasizing to be a vulture on time. We have to take the time away. But now because of global corporatization and because working class jobs where you can set those hours at a certain time, those jobs are rapidly disappearing. Yeah. So there is very little time.
Right. And the focus on, and Bill, you made this point the last time I was here. I think we talked about it off air, but you made a point about we don't necessarily need jobs, but we need to be compensated. And I don't know if you know if you remember that, but it was a really good point that I thought was important.
Well, see, something I wanted to say, because some people listening who are really inside of WEFT might find what I've been saying here kind of contradictory, because I'm actually in most instances anti-paid staff. That's why what I would prefer to have would be, say, as the minimum income, the guaranteed incomes, and a shorter work week, mm-hmm. or work day.
Mm-hmm.
You see, that's, I would prefer to have that where people would have more time to volunteer and do these things rather than have paid staff, because there's problems, you know, Dave, and unions everywhere else with paid staff.
Well, and also that station out in, where was it, Berkeley, was it KRP?
Well, no, I think you're thinking of
WBMA. I'm trying to think of that station out there.
KFPK. KFPK. All the stations west of the Mississippi start with K.
That's right. KPF.
KPFA.
KPFA.
Yeah, staff locked out the volunteers. That's happened in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Also at WBAI.
Okay.
Okay, at the same time. And
because it was a corporatization of the station, basically.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. some things happen. Now, those are different situations, and I just think you want to have minimal paid staff and volunteer as much as possible. And I want people to have more opportunities to have the time to do that.
What did they talk about? I mean, did they throw out at that workshop?
About the media in particular?
Yeah.
Well, they just talked about how, you know, that this is an issue that we need to deal with.
Okay.
I mean, it wasn't, they didn't have any solutions. Now, one guy on this panel talked about, different ways, like in terms of being citizen journalists and how citizen journalists have been important. And one just kind of tip that he threw out there was, if you want to become a citizen journalist, what you can do is become an expert on one thing and or report on something else no one else is reporting on in order to gain an audience. Mm. So that was just mm-hmm. one thing that they talked about.
Okay.
But I think the big issue, like we're talking about here, is how do you really create a media that people will be able to, you know, listen to, and it's readily available for everybody.
Well, I would suggest something. If you are a member of some kind of organization or group, perhaps your organization or group could encourage its other members to get into this media, to mm-hmm. at the very least listen to it. You know, I mean, and that would be one of the great things. That would help build the audience, and would also help inform your membership on things that they might not even be thinking about.
Oh, indeed, indeed. I want to share something with you. This was from Real News Network interview with Annabelle Park, who attended the People's Summit in Chicago. And Annabelle Park, she was the creator of the We Want Bernie Sanders Facebook page, which garnered over 300,000 hits. She's also a political activist and documentary filmmaker. And Paul Jay is the interviewer, asked what her impression was, anyway, she says, "I feel like we're not having some conversations that we need to be having as a movement right now." And she says, "I feel like the way it's framed, it's a bit, like not only is the primary over, but like the election is almost over, it's become irrelevant, and that we should focus on, you know, issues and kind of organizing that way." And then she goes on to say, like, for instance, she says, how do we put pressure on the Democratic Party? You know, on things like not just the platform, but holding them accountable for the whole process. They're still uncounted ballots. They're still flipping counties in California from Hillary Clinton to Bernie Sanders. And she goes on, you know, this, that, and the other. And she just says, I feel the conversation has been too much, up here about just movement building. And I've heard this all at many conferences, and we're not focusing enough on tactics, basically what she's saying.
You know, that's kind of the theme that I get from going to these conferences.
In general?
Yeah. Is that it's great when you're there.
Yeah.
But then you come home and it's business as usual. And then what do you do? And again, I think that might come back to that you have to maybe compensate people mm-hmm. for their work.
The thing is that in response to what you just read, you know, the first thing that has to be identified is what is our objective? Like, mm-hmm. what do we stand for? What is our mission statement? Da, 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 da. I mean, the first thing you do at a conference like that is you go through the mission statement with everybody. You know, this is what we're going to do. This is what we're planning to do. From that, you develop strategies, and from those strategies, you develop tactics.
Mm-hmm.
See that, and so, you know, I don't necessarily agree with people who say that there's too much movement building,
mm-hmm.
because if you don't have those conversations and you don't educate politically about the conditions and about your objective, you're going to have people on 3 or 4 different pages, and that's going to bring so much disjointment to any.
Yeah, that's a good point too. And you know, I think what she was alluding to, and you go in here, is that they were kind of tiptoeing around, where, you know, like this whole post Bernie Sanders campaign thing, is that there's going to be some people, supporting Hillary Clinton. There's going to be some people supporting Jill Stein. There's going to be some people may not even vote, or God forbid, even vote for Donald Trump, you know.
Exactly.
And I think that might be part of what she was referring to, because she goes on to say, you know, basically that, let's see if I can get here to it. She says, the relationship that we have right now, the Democratic Party, she says, many of us supporters feel almost like it's an abusive relationship where they have taken us for granted, where we don't have a voice, and some of our votes didn't get counted even in the primary, and they don't seem to care what we think. And she goes on to say and if you're in an abusive relationship, what do you do? Are you going to continue to believe this person can change and make excuses for the abuses? Or are you going to walk out the door? And, I'm at a point personally where I'm walking out the door because I don't want to make excuses for abuse anymore, for voter suppression, for favoring certain candidates and all the behind the scenes stuff, the corruption, blah, blah, blah. And lastly, what her main point she's trying to make here, as that, you know, she says, I want this to be about holding the Democratic Party accountable if you work within the Democratic Party, and let the country know we need more options. She said the two-party system props up the oligarchy in this country, and we can't be in that situation. And, you know, she says all we can do is support this system or participate in this system. We need something else. I mean, that was her main point here.
I'm saying, though, and that's the thing, that's the kind of stuff that has to get hashed out during the summit, though.
Yes.
I mean,
it seemed like they kind of tiptoed around that. They didn't want to confront that issue.
The first day has to be that, because, look, you're going to have those split parties. They want to stay with the Democrat because Sanders endorsed Clinton. You have those that feel like Sanders betrayed the working people in his endorsement. So you got a bunch of different ideologies at the table there, and that's going to cause conflict.
Yes.
But that conflict is not necessarily bad, but you just have to go through it so that at the end of the conflict, you have some type of agreed upon objective that you can all build something on. That has to be the first part, or otherwise people are going to feel like that.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good point, and I do think that they didn't, at least, maybe they did, but I wasn't there. But it didn't seem like they did that. They didn't, you know, say, here's our mission, here are the objectives, now let's talk about strategy. And I think that really makes sense, and it should be the way these types of things happen. So, because it did kind of feel like a rah-rah, you know, we want to keep this movement going, but maybe a little short on specifics.
Okay. Well, Nancy, if you wanted anything else to say to our listeners before you go?
Yeah, there's a couple of resources that the last breakout session I went to, what we did was we met by state. And there, so I met with the Illinois folks, of course. And they just had some other groups that people might want to try to tie into that I thought I would share.
Okay, websites. Yes, please do.
FairEconomyIllinois.org. They have something called the People and Planet First Budget, which is basically based on a taxing the rich kind of thing. And then ReclaimChicago.org was another one. The People's Lobby USA.org and FightFor15.org were
okay.
Some of the
glad to hear they're thrown in Fight for 15. That's good.
Yeah, and if you you're going to read the announcement.
Absolutely.
Okay,
so. Yep.
All right.
Okay, thank you, Nancy, for coming on. You've been listening to the World Labor on the supported community radio station WFT in Champaign, Illinois. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Some people
Oh, yes. I thought that was a great song there, appropriate theme for what we're going to be talking about here real quickly. And in general, so some quick public service announcements. None of their sports show. Tune in this Saturday, every Saturday from 2 to 3 with host fellow worker Neil Parthen about politics and sports. And Gus, you've been on the Neil's show a couple times. What do you think of it?
I'm telling you, if anybody has any time at all when they're working or not working, you have to listen to Neil Parthen's show. I mean, really, not only is the sport critique awesome, but the way he bridges in the political, and he makes it so entertaining and enjoyable. He jokes a lot with it, a lot of satire,
yeah.
But it's always coming from a great place, so for the working people and for social justice. I mean, it's really one of the greatest shows I've ever been a part of.
Great. Okay, and that's this Saturday, every Saturday from 2 to 3 on WRFU 104.5 FM, the other alternative radio station here in Champaign-Urbana in the Independent Media Center. And also this Sunday and every Sunday, tune in for Labor's Worldview TV. It's from 4 to 5 p.m. on Comcast Channel 6 and live at UrbanaPublicTelevision.org. And this coming Sunday is going to be the history of U.S. government's overthrow of democracies. And next Sunday on the 31st, there'll be a John Pilger film called The War You Don't See. So tune in for that. So, okay.
Oh, Dave, I want to remind some people.
Yes.
I want to ask one thing. Is WRFU, are they streaming yet?
I think they are, but I'm not sure where.
Well, I'll find that out because they only got like a quarter mile.
No, they got about 5 miles now. They did a new antenna.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. Another thing too. We got other people. I want to remind people about Chiampa Weed Radio.
Oh, indeed.
With our friends Joe and Anthony.
Yeah.
You know, Joe in Chicago. He's the shy part. Anthony in Tampa, the AMPA part.
Okay.
Nice.
And they do a lot of really good programs. They actually, they not only have a radio show that's on Monday nights, they also have a complete schedule, okay, of shows that are mainly from radioforall.net.
Okay. And where can people find those?
And they can find them on radioforall.net. As a matter of fact,
okay.
That's radio, the digit for all.net. I also want to remind people that this show is archived at the WEFT website. Mm-hmm. All right. We've been kind of negligent on getting them to radioforall.net, but I'm going to start.
And that's at WFT.org as well.
WFT.org.
Okay.
You can find that there. And, our music archives. And this is something we really got to get out. It is a major thing for WEFT. Is that our music shows. You love that one music show or you want to listen to it, but you can't because you're at work or whatever. Well, it's archived now for 2 weeks at a time.
Okay.
If you're too busy shopping this afternoon to hear the global world psychedelic rock show.
Okay.
It's archived now at, I believe it's called Radio Free America. But you can find out more about it at WEFT.org.
Great. Thank you, Bill. Okay, a couple other public service announcements real quick here. State Representative Carol Ammons is hosting a People's Agenda on Saturday, September 24th at 3:30 at the Independent Media Center, 202 South Broadway in Urbana next to Lincoln Square. And the potluck begins at 3:30. And topics include how to lobby effectively, how and why you should get involved in campaigns, how and why we need to fund progressive list of candidates, overview the Illinois House and Senate races, and identify applicants for open boards and commissions. And that's September 24th. You'll be hearing some more about that, later on. And also there'll be a film screening of the Naomi Klein film, This Changes Everything. It's sponsored by the Sierra Club. And that's going to be Wednesday, September 14th, 6:30 p.m. at Channing Murray Foundation. And you'll be hearing more about that as well as we go on. So the big news this morning, Gus, was Hillary Clinton did not pick Bernie Sanders as her vice president running mate.
I mean, we kind of figured that was pretty much out the door during the primary. I mean, there was no chance that he was going to be vice president, and I think he kind of felt that as well. Hillary Clinton decided to raise some cane. Major shout out to John Lithgow in that very underrated film. But yes, Tim Kaine. So let's get into this, because people need to understand why the conversation we had before the radio break is so important now, because Hillary Clinton has pretty much made her pivot, like how Donald Trump made his pivot during his horrible speech at the RNC the other night. Now Clinton has decided to make her pivot, whereas Trump is emphasizing law and order because he's very repressive and fascist.
Yeah.
Clinton is emphasizing money. So Clinton is making it clear that she plans on running a right-wing pro-war campaign targeted at winning over the military and sections of the Republican Party who were dissatisfied with Trump, and particularly with the Republican candidates' attitudes towards Russia. Now, that's important because there is possibly another Cold War brewing. Clinton also wanted to repudiate any association with the issues of social inequality that motivated the widespread support for her main rival in the primaries, Bernie Sanders. Kaine is among the most hawkish figures of the Senate Democrats. As a governor of Virginia from 2006 to 2010, Kaine oversaw billions of dollars in cuts to the state budget. Let me repeat that. As the governor of Virginia from 2006 to 2010, Tim Kaine oversaw billions of dollars in cuts to the state budget. Sound familiar, right? Bruce Rauner. The state of Virginia is a major center for the military and defense industry and is home to the Pentagon and the headquarters of the CIA. Between 2009 and 2011, Kaine served as the head of the Democratic National Committee. He is close to Wall Street and having recently backed measures to deregulate banks. As a senator since 2013, Kaine had regularly called for increased U.S. involvement in Iraq, Syria, and Afghanistan. He has consistently supported the Obama administration's horrible recklessness against Russia and China, two nuclear armed powers. He has repeatedly pushed for a congressional resolution officially declaring war against ISIS in order to clear the way for stepped-up U.S. imperialism. Like Clinton, Kaine has also supported the creation of a no-fly zone in Syria, an action that would quickly provoke a confrontation with Russia. Kaine is also a member of the Senate Armed Services and Foreign Relations Committees. He is the ranking Democrat on the Armed Services Readiness Subcommittee and the Subcommittee on State Department and USAID Management. Kaine is a devout Catholic who spent time as a missionary in Honduras, opposed access to abortion early in his career. While he claims to be an opponent of the death penalty, he signed off on numerous executions as governor of Virginia. So, like I said, and the biggest thing here that we have to emphasize is that just like Clinton, he is tied directly to Wall Street. So again, this was important for Clinton to do this, and a lot of people are saying that she was supposed to do it at a rally, that she was going to announce this later. But because of Trump's very fascist statement, and if you haven't heard it, you need to watch it. Everybody in working America needs to watch what Trump was saying that night. Because what he's saying is that he's laying out his plan of repressive power against working, poor, different race people. I mean, like he just laid it out there, law and order. That doesn't mean peace and prosperity. That means law and order. Like, I'm going to make sure that this country is cracked down the way I want it to.
Mm-hmm.
So Hillary Clinton had to make her pivot now and say, okay, I need to make sure I set the stage for what I'm going to do for my convention next week, right? So she laid out that Tim Kaine, by selecting him, this is who we are going to be. We are going to be pro-war. We're going to be pro-Wall Street. I'm going to build the country by taking other people's lives and other people's things. I'm going to continue late capital. That's her initiative with
picking which won't benefit Kaine. Working people though.
Of course not.
Yeah.
And so yeah.
Yeah, and what's interesting, I mean, is that I didn't know much about Tim Kaine's labor record, you know. And what's interesting here is that you know, his stand on labor issues, especially the fight against right to work law, Kane is no anti-labor zealot. His Senate vote reticule is highly rated by the AFL-CIO. However, as the Washington Post noted, when the former Virginia governor was preparing his 2012 U.S. Senate bid, Kane supported Virginia's right to work law since he ran for governor in 2005, and his campaign says that position has not changed. Kane has said he strongly supports Virginia's right to work law. Kane has a history of breaking with labor and progressives on economic issues to such an extent that headlines refer to the senator as a quote-unquote a Democrat Wall Street can like. He has argued for looser banking regulations, and most important, he is a leading advocate of the fast-track authority for the very unpopular Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal. And the AFL-CIO support is going to support this ticket?
This is who they call a liberal, mind you. Just what we have talked about with this guy, he's a liberal. He makes the exact same arguments as Bruce Rauner.
Yes.
But he's considered a liberal. That's why we as working people have to really break out of this ridiculous binary of conservative and liberal and understand that we have to choose an alternative. We need to choose a progressive leftist, because these liberals who, like Tim Kaine, like I said, that they are totally pushing the working class off the cliff.
Yes.
I mean, everything that this guy supports is anti-working class.
Indeed.
She couldn't have picked a more right-wing liberal to be her vice presidential pick. It is a complete and utter slap in the face to any working class person that is registered as a Democratic voter.
Indeed. It's going to be interesting to see what happens at the Democratic convention coming up here. I think it starts, this Sunday or Monday. I talked to a couple people that are delegates going to it. They basically were leaving this morning. And the interesting thing was, Hillary Clinton picking this guy, was a real slight. Basically, she doesn't care about what Bernie Sanders supporters think. She doesn't care about making any concessions to him. This vice presidential pick, reflects that. Also, you know, the whole platform committee thing. They conceded nothing on the platform. Nothing. I mean, there's a thing from Michael Leidy of the National Nurses Union. He's, I think he's a communications director. He says it strains belief, but even with 81% of Democrats in support of Medicare for All healthcare reform, the official platform of the Democratic Party has not included explicit support for that since 1972 was the last time the Democratic platform called for support for Medicare for All. And he was quoted as saying that they said basically the platform committee, the people are chairing it, were saying, well, that's a controversial issue. And he goes, well, that has to be the only room of Democrats in the whole country where Medicare for All is controversial. I mean, this just shows you the corporate agenda rules. Hillary Clinton and the DNC and the people on that platform committee don't care about working people. No. They don't care what Democratic Party voters think. All they care about is pursuing and expanding the corporate agenda, even if they lose. Their prime objective is to expand neoliberalism and corporate capitalism at the expense of working people, and they don't care what the average person thinks. They think basically most Democratic voters are a bunch of sheep, and that they're going to vote for them regardless.
That has to be the message at this point. If anybody does any type of serious organizing against these political parties, that the message has to be that the Democratic Party does not care about us. We have to recognize that.
Yes.
And we have to alienate ourselves from that process and come and develop some type of alternative system, whether it is that we withhold our votes, whether we develop some other party to give those votes
yes.
to. I mean, you know, like the reason that Clinton did this, chose this pick, let's look at this. The reason she chose it is because based on the analytics from the groups that works with her, they told her that there's no way you can lose this election at this point. Sanders voters are already gravitating towards you because you got him going out giving speeches in support of two people that are fully against everything that he spoke for.
Yes.
So that lets you know alone that not only is there some type of weird schism within the Democratic Party itself on ideology, but the fact is that they're not thinking of the people's interests at all. They just want you to vote for the party.
Yes.
Vote for the party. We have to break that.
Yeah. And Wall Street and the banks are, they're especially now, but they were even before this pick because, I got a friend who reads the Wall Street Journal every day just to know what the capitalist class is up to. And he said from the very beginning, they were not happy with Donald Trump's victories, in the Republican primaries.
Yeah.
Because he, even though he's a billionaire like they are, He's a wild card. They don't know.
Well, he's a billionaire, but he's not like they are.
He works he works outside of capital, because how capitalism has to work is that the groups of capitalists have to work within said system. But you have a volatile capitalist that goes outside and starts doing things only for him or herself. Mm-hmm. Then it disrupts the entire system, and no system likes when there's a wild card in said system.
Well, yes. And also too, I've been looking at Trump's business record. And he really does this pretty bad to smaller businesses and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But part of his business plan is he basically does everything to burn everybody mm-hmm. and not pay them.
Exactly. Really?
And I bet these bankruptcies and stuff, what he does, he gets like all these banks and stuff so wrapped up where he's too mm-hmm. big to fail.
You see, no wonder they don't him amongst other than the wild card thing. Okay.
Disruptive to their, see, they have a very nice exploitive system working for them.
Right.
And he's very disruptive.
Yeah, he's not a crony.
He's not a team player.
Exactly.
He's not a team player. Yeah. So, that's the thing is, the capitalist class, Wall Street, the banks, they've been behind Hillary Clinton from the get-go, because she's been a loyal servant of them, you know, going back, even before her first run in politics in the Senate. I mean, she was in the White, she was the first lady of Bill Clinton. A lot of people don't realize she was a big mover and pusher in that White House.
Signed so many different, laws, and she pushed so many different agendas. Of course, the big one being three strikes, you're out.
Mm-hmm. Well, the beginning one was the health care.
Well, that was a lame attempt.
I know it was a real lame attempt, but I mean, that's how far back that goes. That was the beginning thing. And then it went to undermining, destroying welfare as we know it.
Yep.
And
three super predators.
See, that's kind of the, yep. It was always some
NAFTA.
There was something in there about probably privatizing Social Security. Who knows?
Yeah, but anyway, yeah, so it's going to be interesting. Now, I talked to these delegates before they left town, and they said that there's talk about maybe of delegates walking out of the convention if they don't get some concessions on this platform. So that's going to be interesting to see what happens. You know, this brings to mind, we don't have time today, but I'd like to talk about this sometime, some of the parallels between what's happening this year and what happened in the Democratic convention of 1946 in Chicago. I'm sorry, 1944 in Chicago, when Harry Wallace got screwed out of the vice presidency, mm-hmm. you know, by a coalition of business capitalists, some Democratic Party insiders. Harry Truman he had no popularity at all. Nobody even knew who he was. And the next thing, he becomes the vice president, because they wanted to make sure that Harry Wallace did not get the vice presidency, because they knew Roosevelt was in poor health. And if Harry Wallace had gotten the vice presidency, of course, he would have been president, because FDR died about 6 months after that convention. There would have been no Cold War. Mm-hmm. We would have had Medicare for all. I mean, this country would have been a whole different place.
A true shining light. Instead of a country that has dined out on World War I and World War II mm-hmm. for decades, and we've run out of that, I think, and we didn't win World War II.
No.
The Soviet Union won World War II.
That's
the Soviet
right.
Union had, I believe, 47 million casualties or something.
That's mind-boggling, yes.
We didn't win. If it wasn't for the Soviet Union, if Hitler wouldn't have turned on the Soviet Union, man, this would be a totally different world.
Yes.
That's true.
Yeah, and don't forget, too, something Truman brought us was the CIA.
That's right.
Which he later repudiated.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know, after the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah, but, you know, Oliver Stone documented really well how
And by the way, that's a radio... you can get that in audio form from radioforall.net.
What was the actual title that not the People's History,
I can find it here real quick.
Yeah. But anyway, he documented real well. There was actually film footage of the portions of this too, about how it was the conventions in Chicago, and how these business interests in the Democratic Party basically persuaded a guy named Kelly. He was the mayor of Chicago at that time, used his police to prevent Wallace delegates from entering the convention. Well, first of all, the vote was going to go down. Wallace was going to win by a huge margin. So they basically said there was a fire And they had to adjourn the convention. So then the next day, when the people were, the delegates were trying to enter the convention, the Chicago police prevented the majority of Wallace delegates from entering the convention in the hotel. Then they took the votes and they did some, of course, during that whole 24-hour period, they did some, a bunch of deal making behind the scenes because there was a few other candidates running. And yeah, it was a whole, I mean, you talk about an underhanded, manipulative, I mean, brute force even, process of, making sure that, Harry Wallace didn't get the vice presidency.
And by the way, that is called all, on radioforall.net anywhere where you can get the audio.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Oliver Stone's Untold History.
Untold
of the
History
United
of the United
States.
States. Yes.
Okay, and episode 2 is titled Roosevelt, Truman, and Wallace, and it's the episode about exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yep. And I've seen that. In fact, I ran the TV series on my, on Labor's Worldview TV, and it's a great, you know, I had to edit it down considerably, just to get 3 episodes on there. And, it's an incredible, series. I mean, it was very difficult to edit because it was so well done. But, we're going to take a quick go ahead.
And by the way, of course, it's also on YouTube.
Yes.
If you want to watch
it. Okay.
But it's just as well. I've listened to the entire series on my MP3 player and it's incredibly informative.
Okay, good.
You don't need the video.
Okay, you've been listening to World Labor on the Support Community Radio Station WT in Champaign. We're going to take a quick music break and then we're going to have, our second guest come in, David Green, and then we're going to open the phone lines for our listeners. So, stay tuned, and you're listening to WFT 90.1 FM and live worldwide at WEFT.org. We'll be right back.
My whole thing about this was I was so frustrated reading the news and reading about how the administration had sold this war and how everybody's behind it. And I don't know anybody that is behind it. And I know so many people that I think people are so afraid to speak up. And I think they don't have a voice. And this is what this is about, for us to get together and find that we do have a voice. Thank you very much for being here.
Listen up, we've got a war zone here today right in our heartland. And across the USA, these multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true. But they've declared a war on us, fight back, it's up to you. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. Going to work could be the death of you and me, but we're not unarmed. Our weapon's solidarity. Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood, the list goes on and on. With every year that passes, 60,000 more gone. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
When they boost your copay,
war on the workers.
Don't you know what to say?
War on the workers.
When they talk privatization,
war on the workers.
And cooperation,
war on the workers.
When they call you a team,
war on the workers.
You better learn how to scream.
War on the workers.
Give in. No more lies.
public education. It's a war on child labor protection. It's a war on the 8-hour day. It's a war on occupational health and safety. It's a war on social security. Now, thanks to WTO.
You're back, World Labor Hour, Ann Feeney, and War on the Workers. And yes, it's a war on all those things, and it looks like it's going to get worse. I want to introduce our next guest here, David.
David Green, from I assume my official capacity, so to speak, for being here would be my involvement in the Prairie Green Party, which is a part of the Illinois State Green Party.
Okay.
A part of the National Green Party. When you invited me on, I assumed that would be the point, although maybe I misunderstood that. Or you just want me to be me, David Green.
Well, how about all the above? I mean, you were listening, you said you were listening to the show earlier, and we kind of, I guess the theme today is where we go from here.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Bernie's.
How do you identify?
Yeah.
Well, you know, first of all, David, I want to thank you for a year and a half or so ago, helping to form the Prairie Green chapter.
Was it that long ago? Oh my gosh.
Well, it was the winter of last year, 2015.
Okay.
And so, we're still, I think, a nascent group, but we have an identity, and we have an email list, which I hope will get larger. And, I think the events that have transpired, in the last 18 or 19 months, are testimony to the fact that it's good that we're here, because people are looking for an alternative to the two-party system for all of the reasons that have been exhaustively explored in the first hour of this program,
uh-huh,
which I've listened to. So we will be having a meeting this afternoon at the Esquire around the corner from where we're sitting now on Walnut Street in Champaign at 1:30. You can look for us in the back room there, and we'll just